Welcome to Brad Golf Podcast, a podcast for the average golfer. My name is Dermot Bradfield and golf is in my blood. Join me as I fumble my way around this fascinating sport. Okay, welcome back to Brad Golf. This is a special. This is episode 23. And this is our WHS special for the 2nd of November. We're going live on the 2nd of November with our new WHS handicap system. So here's our special. But as usual, please do subscribe to the podcast. You'll find Brad Golf TV on various different podcast platforms, including Anchor, Apple, Google, etc. Please do follow us there. We'll also find us on social media at Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. That's Brad Golf TV. You'll also find bradgolf.ie on Facebook, and feel free to contact us at bradgolftv@gmail.com if you have any questions, rules related, handicap related, or Nigel's picks related. So, Nigel, welcome back. It is WHS time. How are you feeling about the new system?
I'm worried.
Worried, Nigel.
I prefer, I'm a Congo man. Congo till I die.
Congo till I die. The rumor is, Nigel, you're going up to double figures. That's what I've heard. So you're going to be hitting 10 point something in the new system. How would you feel about that?
I wish. No, I think I'll be slight. I might be slightly. It's supposed to be the 8 best scores of the last 20, isn't it?
That's right. So, Nigel, what's your exact at the moment? What's your exact handicap at the moment?
On the old system, it's 6.3.
6.3.
So what is to be the old system?
Correct, yeah. In a couple of days, it will be the old system, that's for sure. So just for the record, for the viewers out here, so they know who the better golfer is, Nigel, I'm 5.9 at the moment. There's a big gap. There's a chasm between our handicaps at the moment.
Gaping chasm
that I do need to make very clear. Even though we're both off six, there is this huge chasm. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see.
I didn't bubble up to 7 though this year. I stayed consistent at 6.
I see what you're saying. It'll be interesting to see what we both end up with, considering we're very, very similar to each other right now, as to whether that will still be the case on Monday morning. But Nigel, I have a bit of a preparation done for this one, right? I have a couple of key headings that I wanted to explore with you as a way of explaining to the average Joe out there about this new system, because it is not as simple as people are making out that it's just going to be, you know, switch over, here's your new handicap, Bob's your uncle. It's not really going to be that simple. I found the more research and more reading I've done in this area that it is, there's complexities in it, and it's going to take us a while to get our head around it. So let's start with what is Congo. So Congo has been around for quite some time. Actually, Congo was set up in 1924, right? Do you know what it stands for, Nigel? Congo.
Can't remember, no. This is the Congress or the National Golfing Unions or something like that.
Yeah, you're in the right space. Yeah, not really important, but I said I'd ask nonetheless. The current system that we've been using, which includes your point ones and CSSs and all that kind of jazz, was from 2004 to present day. So we've had this system since really 2004. It was amended in 2004 and it's been applied. And
it's essentially, it's the British and Irish system.
That's right, yeah. Loved and hated, but definitely it is the system. Some of the reasons behind changing from Congo are basic enough, such as, you know, if a player comes over to Ireland from the UK or from America, can they play in a scratch cup? You know, the answer to that is no. They use a different handicapping system. And it gets complex as well when you move into the amateur ranks, not obviously at professional level, but at some, you know, the Irish amateur and things like that. What's the effect for handicap purposes if you're someone from outside of Congo playing at that competition? So there are issues at amateur level when you have people from different jurisdictions coming to play together. Also, even if you just go on holidays and you're playing with someone, the handicap systems that are being used are different and therefore not comparable. So the idea here is that we get a global system. That means that, you know, an American golfer can come to Ireland, play in an Open and down a bait if they wish, and vice versa. You can go over to, you know, you can go over and play Pebble Beach Scratch Cup, you know, and your handicap will be recognized in the same way as it would be in down a bait. So that's the basis for a system like this. So I did a little bit of research, WHS. I went down to Wikipedia. What does WHS stand for? Nigel, there's a really interesting definition for what WHS is here. So this is your first question. So this is going to work like a quiz tonight. You've got points for each question. Some are worth 1 point, some are worth 5, and some are worth 10. This is a 10-pointer because it's an absolutely outrageous question. It shouldn't even be in here, but I'm going to ask it. So WHS, according to Wikipedia, stands for wobbly something syndrome. So what do you think the H? Oh, I've just given you part of it. What do you think the H stands for? Damn it. In the WHS, wobbly something syndrome.
Is it the H?
Is that your final guess? For 10 points.
Is it
H? I'm still going to say 10 points. A wobbly hedge syndrome? No. No.
It's
a wobbly hedgehog syndrome. So, yeah, that's the first question of the day. You've got 0 points in that one. The wobbly hedgehog syndrome. Yeah. I found other WHSs as well, but I found that to be the most enjoyable of them all. We've got WH Smith, the British retailer. But the big one for us is the World Handicap System, and that's what was coming into effect immediately. So I have a few terms, Nigel, that are important in the WHS system that we need to get our head around. So the first one is handicap index, right? So can you draw a parallel for me between a handicap index and what we currently have in Congo? So what do you think the handicap index is going to be about?
Well, your handicap index, from my own knowledge, is essentially going to be the equivalent of what your old playing handicap would have been on the Congo system.
Okay, you've got a point. So very good.
It's kind of like the base figure that you use to calculate everything else.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's a core figure, and it's going to represent everything that is related to your handicap from there on in. So it's the handicap index. I've been calling it myself, it's your computer handicap, right? So that's going to be your basis for all other calculations that take place. So it's also going to be your qualifying handicap for Junior Cup, Jimmy Bruin, Pierce Purcell, Metro, whatever it might be, is your handicap index.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an important.
And it's similar to the way it currently is. It's to the one decimal place.
That's correct.
So if I have hopefully, you know, when they change over the system, I'll still be 6.3. I'll still have a 6.3 handicap index, like I did have a 6.3 playing handicap on the Congo system. I think I'm going to be less, but we'll see.
We sure shall see. They say 80% of golfers are going to see minor changes between 0 and 1. They're saying about 80%. 90% of golfers will see a change of no more than 2. That's what they're anticipating. But if you ask me, I don't think that's based.
Two shots.
90% of golfers will be within the two-shot range. In other words, no more than 2 shots. But I haven't seen any evidence or metrics or numbers behind that. But I have heard very senior people at England Golf and at GUI level saying very much the same things. 80-90% are going to see marginal differences. But I haven't seen any evidence that supports that. I think that's a gut feeling more than anything. But that's my take on it. So yeah, the handicap index is crucial. And yeah, it's to a decimal place. So 6.3, your handicap 6.3 index would be a 6 handicap, right? So if anyone asks you what's your handicap, you'll be able to say 6. But yeah, that's your handicap index. So it's a bit like your current handicap that we would regard as a decimal place. The next one, and this is an important term, is the slope rating. So Nigel, for 1 point, can you tell me what you understand the slope rating to be in this new system? And I do need to warn you, you need to be careful here. There is a very clear distinction between a course rating and a slope rating. So I need you to be very, very certain which to get the point. So slope rating, what's that about?
Slope rating, difference between, or it marks the difference between what a scratch player and what a bogey player. A bogey player would be someone around 20 handicap. It basically marks the difference between what a normal score for a scratch player and a bogey player would be.
Okay, yeah, you're going to get the point. I'm going to give you the point. So they've come up with a system, right? So what they do is they, and the GUI guys were out at our golf club. I was actually playing golf the day they were out. They were measuring various different things from various different tea boxes. In fact, every tea box, yellow, white, and red in Donabate, white being our back stakes, our competitive championship stakes, yellow being our winter stakes, our casual and green fee stakes, and then red for the ladies. So under the new system, it doesn't matter. Gender is actually gone. So we've got rid of gender in the new system. So Donabate Golf Club will have white, it will have yellow, and it will have red. There are three different courses. Anyone can play any of those courses. You don't need to be male or female to play them. So a lady can turn up at the golf club and play off the whites if they're in play, or can play off the yellows if they're in play, or can play from the red. Vice versa, Nigel, you can play off the reds, you can play off the whites, the yellows, if they're in play on that day. But the first is, they've given this number, I think the perfect valley is what they call it, 113. So that's a perfect zero for your golf club, which means you get a slope rating of essentially zero if you are at 113. If you're higher than that, it's more difficult. If you're lower than that, it's deemed to be easier than the perfect zero, okay? So that's the slope rating. Now, how they calculate it is they go to the various tee boxes and they measure where a scratch player would be and where a 20 handicapper might be from the tee based on how far they can carry the ball, how far on average they would hit the ball and so on. And they calculate to those distances and they look at those landing areas. So they look at the landing areas for a scratch player and they look at the landing area for a bogey golfer, as we would call them. And then they assess what's in those landing areas. So if the landing area for a scratch player has a bunker and water hazard and whatever it might be, then that increases the difficulty for the scratch player and vice versa for the bogey player, what might be in play off the tee for them as well. So they check all of these things and ultimately a slope rating is granted for your course. It's going to be a number. It's going to be a number around 113. Some are going to be higher, some are going to be lower. But that slope rating affects the kind of playing handicap that you're going to get at those courses, because obviously the more difficult, the more of an impact that it's going to have on your handicap. Next up is course rating, Nigel. I'm going to ask you this question in a roundabout way. I'm going to say, can you compare the course rating to anything in the previous system that we had with Kongu?
Well, the course rating would be the SSS, or the standard stroke.
Oh, he's on a roll. He's on a roll. It's the SSS, yeah, which is the scratch.
SSS, yeah.
The scratch standard scores, right? So, yeah.
Scratch scores, yeah.
Exactly. So we're talking, you know, it could be 72, 73, 74. Again, depending on your club, it could be somewhere in that range. So, yes, that's our SSS is your course rating. It's typically a number around 70. Right? Around 72, in fact. That's your SSS. And that is the course rating. In fact, they have reviewed the majority of courses. They haven't done them all. I know in the UK and in England, for example, they have 400 left to do. But they're not as concerned about the course rating because it is quite similar to SSS. So for many clubs, they're just going to use their SSS moving forward as their course rating until such time as the rating has been completed by the England Golf. So I know in Ireland, I haven't heard an update from the GOI as to whether they have reviewed all courses at this stage. But if it's anything like England, they may be a little bit behind due to COVID. Yeah. So that's course rating. So we've got a handicap index. That's our computer handicap. We've got a slope rating for your course, which is around about a number of 113, for example. We've got a course rating, which acts much like your SSS, 72. So next, we've got a course handicap, Nigel. So putting you on the spot a little bit, we're going to get a course handicap. Do you know how that is calculated? And I'm going to give you 2 points for this one because it's a complex calculation. But do you know what that calculation is to determine what your course handicap is?
Do now I know? I know how you calculate the differential.
Oh, that's not what I asked. 3 points.
But you need to take.
Ooh, good try though, but no.
No, go on. I can't remember.
You're
going to
pass.
It's supposed to be it's supposed to be your handicap index.
Correct.
Taking the course rating, probably, and then you need to factor in the slope in a rating as well. But you need to take 113 and divide by the slope rating in order to get.
I'm going to give you 1 point out of the two, right? Reason you've lost a point here is course rating is not a factor. So in your course handicap, course rating does not come in. So the course handicap calculation is your handicap index, so 6.3 for Nigel, multiplied by the slope, of your course, so let's say 125, and divide it by 113, which is that perfect zero, or perfect valley as they call it. And that gives you your course handicap. So therefore, if you think about it, if your slope rating for your course, I'll just give you a simple calculation. Let's say your slope rating is 226, right? So it's double 113. I don't even think that's possible. But let's just say for the sake of argument that your course rating twice as difficult as your perfect zero, perfect valley, right? So you get a 226. If you do that calculation, 226 divided by 113 is 2. So you would get double your shots. Your handicap index would multiply by 2. So 6.3 would actually give you 12.5 as your course handicap. Now, I don't think that's even possible. Let's be honest about it. I don't think you're going to have a course.
No,
no. 226. But I think, I want to illustrate.
The toughest courses in the world wouldn't even be up around 150.
But the reason I wanted to illustrate that is if your slope rating is higher than 113, it will increase your handicap index, i.e. your course handicap will be higher than your handicap index if the slope is over 113. If the slope is under 113 for your course, then your handicap index multiplied by that slope is going to bring in a lower course handicap than what you currently have. So therefore, if the slope rating for Donabate is 100, your handicap index multiplied by a lower than 113 slope is going to give you a course handicap below 6.3. So that's just something, I suppose, when you go to a new golf club that you haven't played at before and you look at their slope rating, if it's over 113, you're likely to receive a higher course handicap than your handicap index. And if it's below 113, you're likely to receive a lower course handicap. So that's about the best way of explaining it in a roundabout way. So that's your course handicap. Course handicap is very, very important. It is very, very important. Why do you think I'm saying that the course handicap is very, very important under the rules of golf, Nigel? This is worth 2 points.
Well, that measures, that's essentially how you determine your playing handicap.
Okay. And why is that important for under the rules of golf?
Because your playing handicap, how you determine your score.
Yeah, keep going. You're nearly there. I need you to say a particular word. It usually follows score.
Go on.
Scorecard.
Determines your recorded score.
Yeah,
scorecard,
okay, I'm going to give it to you. You got there. Yeah, this is what goes on the scorecard. So this is crucial. So while Nigel's handicap index is 6.3, which you might think is 6 is my playing handicap, that was the olden times, it's actually your course handicap that goes on your scorecard. So it must be recorded on the scorecard. So your 6.3, Nigel, needs to be adjusted by slope and divided by 113 to give you your course handicap. That's what is recorded on the card. Now, that part has not been clear. I had to do some digging to find that out. I would have thought that would be one of the headline items, because under the rules of golf, you must record your handicap on your scorecard. Failure to do so would lead to disqualification. In fact, if you underestimate your handicap, if you overestimate your handicap, you can get disqualified. If you underestimate it, you will only receive the shots that you underestimated it to. So it's a really, really important thing that we get right. And after doing some digging, I found the official quote from the GUI, which says, the course handicap for the tees being used must be recorded on the card. That's not optional, must be recorded. So please, folks, you know, and this is where I can see the mistakes happening, is that golfers are going to put their handicap index on their scorecard. You do need to figure out before you go on the course, what is your course handicap? Because what you receive at Donabate may not be the same as what you receive at the Island or Portmarnock or, you know, Mount Juliet or wherever you might go. It will not be the same. Let's be honest about it, because it's going to be adjusted by slope. Okay. That's a really important one, and forgotten, sadly. The next one, Nigel, we used to have a term called playing handicap, and it has come back again. We do have a playing handicap now as well, but it's different under the new system. So do you know anything about the playing handicap on the new system compared to the old system?
Well, you take your course handicap,
mm-hmm.
and I imagine you bring in the course rating.
Good try. No, good try, but not in this case. So playing handicap used to be like this. Nigel has 6.3 as his computer handicap, and his playing handicap was 6, right? That was pretty much the standard there. You got six. Now, there was a few instances where you got less than six, Nigel. Can you figure out, can you remember any of those?
Right. This is referring to different types of, yes, if I was playing strokes or Stableford, my playing handicap would be six.
Correct.
But if I was playing four ball,
yeah,
someone would be 90% of your actual handicap or your.
So you would receive, under the old system, you would receive five shots for four ball because a six handicap, you lose 0.6. So that's your 10% gone. So that brings you down to 5.4, which gives you a handicap in a four ball of five shots. Yeah. So under the new system, things are adjusted for all formats, not just four ball. Did you notice? Nope. So this is new information. So under the new system, playing handicaps, so this is, and I know I've lost people already with the course handicap calculations. It gets worse, folks. If you're playing singles, it's 95%. So if you're playing Stableford or you're playing strokes, you will receive 95% of your course handicap. Yeah, I know, madness. So work out what your course handicap is, adjust by 95% for singles. For four ball, it's 85. Okay. If you're playing V-par four ball, it's 90%. If it's singles match play, it's 100%. If it's four ball match play, it's 90%. And for foursomes, it's 50% of the combined. I just think it's madness because there's so many various different calculations here across the various different formats, but these are all the various different calculations. I haven't listed them all because actually Scramble is listed in their rules as well. I haven't gone into those. I've covered the more common ones, which would be four ball and match play and foursomes. Foursomes is the only one that remains really unchanged. If Nigel, we played together, our combined handicap would be 12. 50% of that would be six. So that's pretty much the same as what was there before. But in fairness, it's 50% of the combined course handicaps, which would give us our handicap for foursomes. But yeah, for four ball, it's 85% now. And for singles, it's 95%. So the biggest change there being singles, 95%. What do you think of that change, that 95% for singles?
I'm not sure why they do that. Basically, talked about the course handicap.
Yep.
And you've made a calculation for that based on the slope rating.
Correct.
Why didn't you just put the whole calculation into that? Why bring an extra step in?
The extra step is required for competitions. So these are for competitions. So the course handicap is really, really important for determining, I suppose, your score on the given day against a particular course and slope. So that's really important for handicap purposes. But playing handicap then is what you're entitled to in competition. So in much the same way as before, the 90% rule for four ball was something that was only applied when you were playing a four ball competition, right? Same when you're playing a foursomes competition, the 50% rule applied. But if you're playing green fees or you're playing a society golf as it was, your course handicap would have been the calculation you'd really be interested in. But now, and according to England Golf here, the reason for the 95% is to give the lower handicappers a better chance or a good chance of competing against those of the higher handicaps. So that 5% cut there will affect your higher handicappers more than it will affect your lower handicappers. So a six handicapper is likely to see little or no change under singles handicap, whereas a 28 handicapper is likely to see an impact of potentially one shot that affects their handicap. So the justification apparently is to give create a leveler playing field when it comes to competitions. I don't see it myself. I don't understand that, but that's the justification that was given when it comes to competitions. So yeah, so it gets even more complex for playing handicaps. It's 95% of the course handicap.
And that's the exact, is that the course handicap to one decimal place?
Oh, that's a really good question. So, right, let's just work it back. Your handicap index, 6.3. For calculating your course handicap, from my reading, it's 6.3 multiplied by the slope and not a rounded down 6. So that would give you your course handicap. Your course handicap would then be rounded down to the nearest figure because that's your course handicap received on the course. So therefore, I would say it's 95% of your rounded down course handicap. That would be my understanding from the reading I've done. So it's going to be 95% of your playing six. In fact, I can say with 99.999% certainty that's the case, because I have seen already they're creating these grids that are going to be at golf clubs for you to be able to find, okay, I'm a 6.4 is my course handicap. So what does that give me in Sableford? What does that give me in strokes? And I'm pretty certain it's rounded down in your course handicap to calculate what 95% is. So it'll give you 95% of six. It won't give you 95% of 6.4. So that's my, I'm pretty certain on that, that it's going to be a rounded down course handicap multiplied by 95%. So it's getting complex, is it not?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're not a fan of that.
No, it's, I would say complex. It's getting a bit, it started off being quite exact, and then it's kind of taking, I don't know if I agree with the playing handicap idea. Yeah.
Okay.
It should be all based off of a one decimal place number.
Yeah.
If you're going to be that exact, if you're going to bring in 113 divided by the slope index, and then you suddenly round down and then you take 95% off, it sounds so convoluted.
It does, yeah. It sounds like we're using exact maths to just pluck a number out of thin air. It does. So they're going to have these grids at golf clubs that help golfers to determine, based on their handicap index, where they fit into from a course handicap point of view, and also where they fit into from a playing handicap point of view. So it's going to be pretty much standard before you go out on any golf course that you're going to have to double check these charts to find out where you are. Now, what they do say with regards to playing handicap, again, and they clarify this at England Golf, is you don't necessarily need to worry about this. You put your course handicap down, you go out and you play, you put down your gross scores on your card, and you put your course handicap scores on your card, and the computer or the system will figure out the rest for you. That's what they say. But I know, being a low handicapper as you are, Nigel, if I have six shots or five shots, that's a big difference for me. I need to know when I'm playing whether I've got five or six shots. If I've got 24 shots, I think I can get over a difference between 24 or 23. But if I've got five or six, that's significant. I need to know that before I go out. So I wasn't very happy with their response, which was, don't worry about it.
No, I'm not happy with it either. Because if you're saying you have to put your course handicap on the scorecard, but not necessarily your playing handicap.
Correct.
And they say that the computer will allow and will calculate this for you. You could be signing for a wrong score.
Well, you only sign for a gross score. So let's be clear on what you sign in a card. You do not sign for Stableford. You do not sign for Stableford, and you do not sign for foursomes, let's say. You're signing for gross scores. That's what you're signing for. Now, to be fair to what you're saying, 95% for strokes. So what handicap am I putting in there underneath my gross score? Well, the argument is, in the rules of golf, all you are responsible for is the date, sorry, your name, I should say, your name being on the card, your handicap being on the card, which in this case is your course handicap, and your gross scores per hole. Any calculations that are performed after that are not relevant. In fact, they help the committee, and please do it, because people who don't do that create a lot of work for the committee. But if you make a mistake, if you say 5 for 2 points, but it's in fact 5 for 1 point, that is not a disqualification. You're not cheating. You have not made a mistake. You haven't signed the incorrect score on your card. It's the gross score that matters. The computer will figure out the rest for you, whether you've got two shots, whether you got 2 points in the hole or 1 point in the hole. Even if you do a gross competition where you enter a scratch cup, and Nigel puts down that he had 114 strokes, I'm sure you wouldn't, Nigel, and you took off your handicap and you put your course handicap, which you're supposed to do, and you say six, so 114 minus six is 108, and it turns out actually you only had five because of the 95% rule, for some reason that you only had five, you would not get disqualified for that, because that's a calculation that's being performed on the card. It's only your gross scores per hole that you're accountable to. So I wouldn't be overly concerned there, Nigel. But it's a fair point. It's a fair point. Okay. Next question, worth 1 point. We used to have different categories of golfer. So what is category one now? What handicap range is category one under the new system? Or what was it in the old system first, maybe? What was category one?
Well, the old system was scratched to 5.4.
That's correct. Yeah, it was anything, actually, even plus handicappers were in category one. So it was up to 5.4. So what do you think it is under the new system?
I'd say it's 4.5 and lower.
Sorry, it was a trick question. So you've got zero, I'm afraid. There is no category one anymore, because if you think about it, the categories were only really relevant for point ones, if you think about it. That was the only way the categories were differing. So for a category one golfer, a shot above the CSS resulted in a cut of minus 0.1, and any shots outside of the buffer received a 0.1. Well, actually, to a maximum of 0.1. And when you move to category two, cuts were in the range of 0.2 per shot you beat your CSS, and the maximum you could receive back was 0.1. Okay, so the difference there is what you can get cut within your range, really. And category one golfers could only get cut 0.1 for each time they beat CSS. So if you shot a 70 and the CSS was 72, you could get cut 0.2 and 0.2 only. But under the new system, that doesn't apply. It's actually the 0.1s are not in play anymore. So there's no such thing as a category one golfer anymore under the new system. There's actually no categories at all, because we don't have the 0.1s. So sorry, that was a trick question. We do have elite golfers. So that's an official term now in the handicap system. So an elite golfer is anyone who is scratch or better. So they're determined to be elite players. I tried to claim last week when they closed down golf, where it's still open for elite, by the way. So Gavin Moynihan, our local pro, who's playing on the European Tour, or plays events on the European Tour, I should say, he's entitled to play. He's an elite golfer. In fact, he has a potential to get into the Olympics in is it next year? He's the potential. Now, he's an outside bet to get a spot there. Let's be honest about it. But he has a potential. He's a candidate. So therefore, he's entitled under the new restrictions in Ireland to play golf at the moment. So he's defined as an elite golfer. I tried to claim it was everyone from six down. In fact, I didn't get very far with that one. But that was quite a personal.
Who did you go to on that?
The council at Donabay Golf Club, which I'm part of. So I made a claim that it was six handicappers and down. I actually said, you won't like me for this, I said anyone from 5.9 and down. So that would not have covered you, I'm afraid.
All right.
But I did claim that it wasn't listened to. So unfortunately, I can't play golf at the moment. But yeah, under the new system, scratch or better is an elite player. Okay, we have a new thing, Nigel. It's called PCC. So for one point, tell me, what is that similar to from the old system, PCC?
Essentially, that brings in the CSS. And correct. It's the playing conditions. I don't
Calculation. Yeah, very good. So yeah, it's the equivalent of the CSS from before. So on a windy day in Donabate, windy days, because we do have them, we're near the coast and we do get our windy days, you often see the CSS increase from what might have been a standard 72, which would be our SSS, right? On a standard 72, in some days we've seen it go as high as 74, haven't we? I can't recall a 75. It would be very, very rare. But 74s have happened, and have happened in the past. Yeah. So under the new system...
A few 73s recently.
There have been a few 73s recently, and I found actually the course has been playing very tough in the last month or so. We've seen more above 72s than actually on 72, it must be said, of late. So yeah, under the new system, the playing conditions calculation will adjust, much like the CSS did before. But the thing is here, CSS were for competitive rounds. PCC is calculated not just for competitions. So green fees will also be adjusted if the player has obviously notified beforehand that they're going to use it for handicap purposes. Those scores are also used against the PCC calculation. So PCC,
Dermot.
Oh, sorry, yes, go for
Dermot,
it.
Dermot, yes. I have a question. How is the PCC calculated?
Okay, so...
And they be bribed?
Can they be bribed? So the PCC system is computer generated. So I'm not sure of a system that can be bribed just yet. But how it's calculated is apparently quite simple. All they require is 8 cards in order to calculate a PCC. So previously the CSS needed, I think, 5 or 6 players in a competition in order for a CSS to be calculated. But it was heavily weighted towards the lower handicap player of the players that have played. So the closest to scratch that player had a significant weighting with regards to what the CSS would be. So if your scratch player or closest to scratch player performed really poorly, that would have an impact on CSS. Obviously, the more players that play, if you have 100 players that play, the impact of that low player is very low. But when you have a small field, the impact can be quite significant. Under the new system, it's just 8 cards. Now, those 8 cards can be very differing cards. And what I mean by that is, you've got Nigel Cosgrave, who plays off the yellow stakes on a green fee that day. Okay, so he's one of the cards that was inputted into the system on that day. You've got Dermot, who played in a singles competition off the whites that day. He has a card in. You've got Daryl. So Daryl played off the red tees that day in a... let's say he played a 4-ball competition, and he's put a card in for counting purposes also, for handicap purposes, off the red stakes. So that's 3 players playing off 3 different stakes. So you could argue 3 different courses in that respect. Those 3 can be part of the 8. So once we get 8 across that spectrum of in Donabate, the white, the yellow, and the red, once we get 8 cards, they will then calculate, the algorithm works out the differentials essentially between what would have been a standard day and the performance on the day. So the calculation will work out to -1 or to +3, much like CSS. So +2, +3 would be for tough conditions in which, you know, it's windy or on average the players struggled against the course. Today's where it might be -1, where for some reason the wind assist was on most of the holes. Now, you won't find that much in Donabate because of the structure of the course, but on some links courses that may well be possible because of the way they're designed. They're designed to have a prevailing wind, and sometimes if that wind changes, it can actually make the course easier. In some respects. So we might see that more at links courses than your traditional courses, the -1. But there can be conditions that lead to a -1. More often than not, you're going to see an increase, particularly in Ireland, of +1, 2, or 3 in the playing conditions. Okay, so I have a question for you, Nigel. In my 20 cards, so I've got 20 cards. I'm a nomad. No, I'm not a nomad because I'm a member of Donabate Golf Club, but I play a lot of other courses, much like you do, right? So we play a lot of courses. I've played, you know, you played Baltray, we played Mount Juliet, we go over to the island a bit and so on. So we've played a lot of different courses, Nigel. So in my top 8, right, I'm trying to work up my top 8. I have a 72 from one club and a 73 in another. Is the 72 better?
Well, no, not necessarily.
Yeah, so that's really important here. And I think some people are just making, you know, they're going in. Now, to be honest, for the average golfer, they play the majority of their golf in one course. So I think most people sitting down listening to us today, this is irrelevant because their 20 qualifying cards, that their last 20 have all been played in their local club. And that's fine. If that's the case, that's fine.
Well, it's easy, compare. Last 20, I have a 78 from Baltray and a 77 from Donabate. But the one from Baltray is a much better round than the 77.
Yeah. So I would suggest anyone who's trying to work out their 20 at the moment, they look at the CSS in those instances to see how close they were to CSS and then decide, right. So let's say, for example, you have a 72 and a 73. Let's say the CSS on the day was 72. So I've shot my handicap. For the 73, the CSS could have been 74. In that case, I've beaten my handicap by 1. So therefore, the 73 would be a better score in that instance. So you do need to look at the CSS in order to determine. So at Baltray, when you shot that 78, I've no doubt the CSS... did you get cut for that 78 at the time? Or you definitely hit the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got cut. So that 78...
Whereas, 0.6. It was 3 shots below the CSS.
Yeah. Whereas in Donabate, if you shoot a 78, more often than not, off 6, you're gonna hit... The CSS for the day and not get cut. So in that case, yeah. Significantly different. Even though it was a higher score that you had in Baltray, that is going to count towards one of your 8. So you do need to bear that in mind. It's not just take my gross score or my net score, which were my best 8 net. It's not as simple as that. It is your best cards over the 20. And some of those cards, well, it depends on how you performed against the rest of the field, right? So good answer there, Nigel. It's not a case of 72 being better than 73 when it comes to choosing the cards. It's score differentials that make up your top 20. So that is a 113 divided by slope multiplied by an adjusted gross score, less the course rating. So it's actually quite complicated in there, that calculation as to what is your best 8. Okay. Nigel, there is something called anchor points. Do you know what these are under the new system?
They're probably points where you're kind of, this is your highest within a 12-month period or your lowest within a 12-month period.
Yeah.
Something like that, but I don't actually know.
You're in the right space. I'll give you half a point for that one. So the anchor points, yeah. So players will go through bad spells, right? Some of it will be real, some of it will be fake. Let's be honest about it. But golfers do go through bad spells. So what they have said is, under the new system, the maximum you can gain in a 12-month period, and I'm not talking 1st of January to 31st of December. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about in a 12-month period from any period in time. The maximum you can receive back in that 12-month period is 5. Now, that's quite a significant change from our previous system, which really has only been in play for a couple of years, but that you can only receive a maximum of 1. So you could receive 10 point ones in a row, and it would cap out at that point in the old system. Now, yes, you could get shots back from a committee who would look at your handicap and say, look, Nigel is playing really badly and has been for 2 years. Let's give him an additional shots. But under the old system, there was a cap there that kicked in once you got 10 point ones and stopped you from receiving any more. Under the new system, yeah, it's quite scary, in fact, but you can increase to 5 in a year in a 12-month period from your last score. So it goes back 12 months from your last score. So if you shoot a score today, it goes back in that 12-month period from today back to the 27th of October 2019. And in that period, it applies a limit of a 5-shot gain over that period from your lowest handicap. So that's quite a thing. I presume you're concerned about this, Nigel. This is 5 as opposed to what we would have had before as 1.
Concerned about it for other people. Not for myself.
I don't mean it. Absolutely, I don't mean from your...
I'm going the other way. I'm going down.
Of course you are. But this does open us up, doesn't it, for sandbagging?
Without a doubt. I think this has opened up a whole new vista and a whole new range possibilities for unscrupulous players to maintain and massage their handicaps, really.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. I think handicap committees are going to have their work cut out monitoring this.
Agreed.
I guess it's not going to really rear its ugly head or, manifest itself until the spring when we get into counting events. Agreed. And I'm sure you'll talk about counting events further or later on, but I can't see it being an issue until then.
Great, yeah.
But it will be an issue.
So they have confirmed in their calculation they have what's called a soft cap and a hard cap. So the soft cap applies at an increase of 3. So, based on the cards you play, it'll calculate it out. But once it gets to an increase of 3 in a 12-month period, it reduces the impact of any further cards by about 50%, which means that, the ability to move up from 3 to the hard cap of 5 is actually quite limited, right? So there's very little ground to be gained between 3 and 5. It's very, very hard to gain any ground in that space, I should put it that way. The hard cap then is set at 5. So once it gets to 5, the system will not allow you to increase any further. Now, where they have given advice here is for handicap committees, they need to monitor this for golfers, particularly any golfers that increase by more than 2 shots within a calendar year. They've asked that a review is conducted of those golfers to see if that's justifiable or if there is any potential here for concern. And that can be addressed by a handicap committee. So it does look like here, handicap committees are going to have to monitor this on a monthly basis for the golfers to see where the movements are in their golfers, and particularly looking at those who've increased by 2 shots or more within a 12-month period. So I'm hoping that your local handicap committee are going to keep a close eye on that in the new year so that Nigel doesn't shoot up to 10, right? We can't be having it. Yep.
Love that.
love it. So next up then is exceptional scores. So Nigel, tell me what you remember from the old system with regards to exceptional scoring and how that worked on handicaps in the old system.
Right. Well, exceptional score, you had a net differential of 4 shots or more.
Very good.
And you had two scores of that nature that happened within a period of 10 rounds. then you would be qualified for an exceptional score reduction of your handicap. Now, that would depend, and the scale of the reduction would depend on how far above that threshold you went.
Correct, yeah. So, like on a simple CSS being 36, if you shoot 40 points, that's four ahead, that's your differential of four. If you shoot two 40-pointers in close proximity, it was actually over a period of months as opposed to rounds, so that was interesting. It applied over a couple of months. And if you shot two 40s in that period, an exceptional cut would apply to your handicap. Now, if you shot two 40s, it's quite likely you'd receive an exceptional cut of one. But if you shot two 43s or something like that, it could be higher. Again, this did not apply to category one golfers, did not apply to those, but it did apply in all other categories in the old system. So yeah, so that was our old system for exceptional scores. There is a mechanism in place for the new system that can address exceptional scores. So these are exceptional scores within your handicap index, i.e. in your last 20 scores. So it applies for anything in your last 20 scores where you were seven shots better. This is where I think it's massively different from before. But if you're seven shots better than your handicap index, a minus one is applied to your handicap index. So it's like an exceptional cut of one. But it's for seven shots or better, which I think is too broad. But anyway, you need to go to 10 shots or better to receive a minus two application to your handicap. Okay.
If I was to, you're saying that if I was to shoot two under par or one under par in Donabate, which would be seven.
Better than your handicap.
Strokes.
Okay.
Better just six for argument's sake.
Yeah.
I get an extra one off my, is it the differential or is it off the handicap index?
So you'd get minus one applied pretty much immediately to your handicap index. So your handicap index would immediately jump. Regardless of whatever the like you said there, you shot a gross one under par. So that would obviously affect your 20 cards as well, right, in the calculation. So that would affect you. But you'd also receive a one-shot penalty a one-shot cut on top of whatever that calculation would give you. So let's say, I'm going to give you a rough example. You're 6.3, you go out, you shoot one under gross. And that now is part of one of your eight best scores. And it calculates your new handicap to be 5.2. You'll also receive a one cut on that, which will bring you to 4.2 under your new handicap. And that will stay in play until that card falls off your top 20. So that minus one cut will be applied to your handicap index during that period. Next is preferred lies. So this is the one that I confirmed last week, and it was a correction on what had been said previously. And it involved a bit of reading as to what does preferred lie mean. So under the rules of golf, preferred lie is where you can place the ball in a mowed area of the course, i.e. a fairway. It does not refer to placing in the rough. So under the rules of golf, there is no situation under the rules of golf that allow for placing in the rough. So what many courses do in Ireland over the winter months is they do allow placing in the rough in order to protect the course, because we can get waterlogged and various different things in play. We protect the course by allow placing in the rough. Also, conditions are very tough. So for those competitions, they were classified as non-counting back in the day, non-counting competitions. So it's fair to say in the new system, they will not count towards handicap. So in much the same as before, if you're placing in the rough, it will not count as one of your 20 cards, and it cannot count towards one of your 20 cards. However, if your club does have placing the fairway only, and therefore if you're in the rough, tough luck, play it as it lies, then the card can count for handicap purposes regardless of when you play it. So whether it's Christmas Eve or whether you play 4th of January, it's irrelevant. So Nigel, you'll still be able to go to Portmarnock in January as you did before on New Year's Eve and play your round of golf and have it count for handicap purposes.
Woo!
Next question.
Looking forward to New Year's.
Well, absolutely. I think it's a great idea to go every year there. It's definitely that time of year, it's nice and fresh. So tell me, Nigel, what qualifies you for Interclub? I think I may have answered this previously, but what handicap qualifies you for Interclub? I was asked this by someone the other day. In particular, the question was, well, look for Metro, right? So the Metro, the cutoff is nine. And it's then played scratch match play, singles match play. That's typically the way Metro works. And he said, well, what happens if a fella rocks up to Donabate to play in the Metro? And when we put his handicap into the R, you know, slope, et cetera, and he comes out with an eight handicap, is he now someone who's not eligible to play for their Metro team. So what qualifies you for Interclub, Nigel?
Your handicap index.
Correct. So it's your handicap index on whatever closing date. So competitions, whether it's Metro, whatever,
Dreamy, yeah, I'd say it'll be, but the, I imagine it's the handicap index at the end of the year.
Yeah, it actually depends.
Before, it was your lowest. It was your lowest in the previous year.
Correct. So I think the Jimmy Bruin, Pierce Purcell, and so on, I think those various different competitions are going to have to change their rulings on that. Yeah, you know, on the basis that we're moving to a new system. So it's likely, and I'm estimating here, guesstimating that in 2021, they will base it on your handicap index as of the 1st of January 2021. That's quite likely to be the qualifying threshold there because of this change over to the new system. That's likely what they'll do. If you ask me, they should do that every year anyway. And have that cut off a bit closer to when the events are taking place rather than your handicap of the previous year. You'd have bandits like myself who were qualifying at, I think, qualified at maybe 10 for the Jimmy Bruin, and I was playing off. No, actually, I lie. I think I qualified on Jimmy Bruin at 12 handicap, and I was playing at the time off 8. So it would get rid of that kind of banditry, if you will. I've just called myself the bandit. if you bring it closer, I think, to when the event takes place. So it's likely to happen in 2021, if I'm honest. So yes, you'll have to check the conditions of the competition itself, because some have different closing dates. So you will need to check that. But your handicap index as of that closing date that determines your qualification, not your playing handicap on the day. Buffer zones are gone under the new system. Nigel, will you miss buffer zones? I did like them. Sometimes, you know, you'd be out of the competition, you know you're not going to win, but there was something to play for in a buffer zone. Will you miss that?
Yeah, I think I will. I think it was always a target to hit. You know, as you say, you might have started a round badly, but you might pick it up as the round goes on, and you have a chance of, you know, we were always trying to get close to 34 points. As it would be in Donabate. If you knew you got 34, you were in the buffer and you'd avoided a point one.
I think
you're going to have a different target now.
Yeah, I think the category one golfer is going to miss it probably more than any other, because for them, point one is a disaster, right? Because the impact, they can only get cut point one, remember. So getting an increase of point one was actually detrimental in many respects. So I think they'll miss it more. Giving them something to play for, as you say, going out to shoot 35 or 34. So yeah, it's gone under the new system. Currently, apparently now, according to England Golf, they said currently players play within buffer a third of the time. So if a golfer plays three times, one of those instances, they play in the buffer or better, and the other two instances, they do not. They feel that this is going to change with the new averaging system, that would make golfers more likely to shoot around their handicap more often under the new system. That's their opinion, that's their view on it, that it would actually increase players' ability to shoot around their handicap. Whereas they feel it was with the old system, because it wasn't an averaging, it was basically your best handicap was the handicap you went out on a day. So that was the best you could possibly achieve on a day in some respects. Whereas they feel with an averaging system, it gives you more of a chance of shooting around your performance. Around an average performance. The annual review is gone. So the handicap review, the annual review is gone, but it's still recommended that handicap committees spend time looking at golfers. In particular, they can put a cap on allowing any upward movement on handicap. So if they look at Nigel and they go, right, Nigel, we're putting a cap on yours of 6. So you're not going above 6. They can do that. They can also penalize golfers and give them handicap cuts. So next question, and this is one of the final questions. What's the max handicap for men, and what is the max handicap for women under the new system? So what are the two different handicap ranges for men and women under the new system?
Are they both 54?
Correct. So under the new system is a bit of a trick question. I was trying to trap you there. Under the new system, there's no such thing as a men gents golfer or a ladies golfer under the new system. It is irrelevant. Gender is irrelevant. So the max handicap for a golfer is 54. Yeah, 54. So they do recommend, England Golf do recommend that you have certain competitions for certain handicap ranges. And I'm just going to float this one with you, Nigel. What about a proposal? And I'm not suggesting for a moment that we do this in Donabate. I just want to discuss it. What about a proposal that for medals and maybe some of the majors, that we cap the handicap to a certain point. So let's say I'm just going to throw out 18 handicap or better for medals or for majors. Now, obviously, being a six handicapper, we've some, you know, we've got a vested interest in this one. But what do you think of maybe handicap ranges for certain competitions?
I would be for it, but it's unlikely that they'll ever do it.
So the main issues that clubs would face there is, you know, they want to keep competition income.
You could have a legal challenge to it.
No, actually, there is instances where this is the case. So you would actually have a justifiable reason, you know, a legal reason to do it, because let's say the Junior Cups, for example, they have handicap ranges. If you're outside that range, you cannot compete in that competition. So you can determine in your own club what handicap ranges apply to what competitions. England Golf suggests that for midweek golf and more casual type golf that you don't have limits. But they do suggest that when it comes to weekend or championship events, that in order to keep pace of play and in order to keep it fair for those involved, that they put some handicap limits in place. So 54 handicapper, for example, playing, you know, with ourselves, Nigel, like, I find it hard to consider giving someone two shots in a hole. Like, for me, it's like you can get a net zero on a hole because you're receiving two shots here. It doesn't, you know, they get a two on a par three and it's a zero. It defies logic for me, someone getting 36. Going as high as 54, I can imagine that being a bit of a nightmare, that round, if I'm honest with you. So they're suggesting, England Golf has suggested, that for medals in particular, as they stated it, the championship competitions, that you have some limits in your handicap range. But I think, yeah, there would be a revolt within Donabate, because we've quite a few, you know, loyal members of the golf club who've been with the golf club for many a year. And I'm not going to name them here now because their handicaps might be in the 30s, but quite incredible gentlemen of the golf club who'd be of 32, for example. To say to them that they can't play in a medal when they've played in every medal for the last 30 years could be a difficult one to get past any committee. But maybe clubs need to consider a maximum. Maybe at the Gents Club, maybe it's 36. Maybe we just say, look, if you're not in the 36 range, you can't play in the championships, i.e. medals, but you can play in the open singles on a Monday. It's something to consider for golf clubs, I think, for pace of play, if nothing else. Okay, net double bogey still applies. So if you're playing in a strokes competition and you shoot a nine, you pick up your ball. Yes, you cannot win that strokes competition, so you're now DQ'd from that strokes competition. But for handicap purposes, your card can still absolutely apply, because it applies a net double bogey to anything above your handicap. So let's say you're playing off scratch. It's a par five. So the highest score you can receive on that score for handicap purposes is seven. That's it. That's the maximum score you can receive on that hole. If you get an eight for handicap purposes, it's going to be treated as a seven if you're a scratch golfer. If you're an 18 handicapper and it's a par five, then eight is your maximum score on that hole for handicap purposes. That still applies. That was pretty much the same as before. And the final thing, Nigel, before I let you go, is failure to submit a score. So under the old system, and in particular, if we go back more than 5 or 6 years ago, there were instances where category one golfers did not return a card in order to not receive a 0.1. Now, I know that was changed in recent rules on the handicap system of Congo. That meant that if a non-return resulted in a 0.1 for that very, very reason. But under the new system, failure to submit a score. So Nigel, you go out on the day in question. You say, you're going out doing a green fee. You say, I'm going to do this for handicap purposes today, because you want to go up to 10, right? That's your challenge. You go out and you start shooting the lights out, right? You're playing with me. You start shooting the lights out. You're 200 at the turn. You're like, okay, I'm not submitting this score. So what can the handicap committee do for someone who does not return a score when they had said beforehand that they would? What do you think they can do?
Well, if you got to the turn, they could basically accept your nine hole score.
Oh, the card has disappeared, Nigel. So they don't know that you shot the lights out in the front nine. I was playing with you. We kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You know, maybe this card, Nigel, needs to disappear down your pocket there, right? Because I'm your buddy, of course. So now there is no card. I must have lost it, says Nigel. So what can the committee do in these situations, or can they do anything?
Stiff letter.
Yeah, so according to...
Tell us.
according to England Golf, they have a number of things that they can do. So they can apply a penalty score. So in other words, they can give you, they could decide to give you one of your take your top eight and average them out and take, give them one a score in that space. They can decide to do that. For repeated failures, they can actually reset your handicap index, or they can apply disciplinary steps. So golf clubs need to look at this closely, make sure they have procedures in place for people who fail to submit a score. Because under the new system, this is a huge issue. In the old system, it was less of an issue because it automatically applied a 0.1. Your handicap was still adjusted and so on and so forth. Under the new system, you must return a score and you are, have a responsibility to return it as soon as possible. So you are not to delay on that either because it can affect the PCC on the given day. So there's a requirement for you to submit those scores in a timely fashion, particularly if you've indicated beforehand that you'll be using it. So that's a that's an important one. And committees are going to have to be strong on that one. So if cards go missing, then penalties need to be applied.
I don't think it differs too much to what the previous system was.
Well, on the previous system, it was an NR.
Guys that didn't have... Yeah, it was an NR, but that still affected. If they didn't return the card... And they'd no record of any of the scores. So they, sometimes you can do an NR where you just miss one hole, but you can it can act like say like a stable for sort of situation.
Correct.
And they can use that for handicap purpose. But if you completely didn't return a score, they gave you the 0.1, but that did affect the CSS.
That's true. That's true. But your handicap was adjusted on the back of that NR. So they're saying under the new system, your handicap wouldn't be. So that's where it needs to be addressed when people do NRs. Because what they don't want is a situation, again, where the category one golfer, their cards go, well, not the category one golfer, under the new system, let's say you're low handicappers. And we do have some at the golf club, look, even for yourself, Nigel, you could say, I don't want to go up this year. So when I shoot bad rounds, I'm just going to make those cards disappear because I don't want my handicap to go up. I want to go down and I want, you know, my 20 cards to be all good cards, right? So when I shoot a bad card, that card's going to disappear. It's not going to make it into the system. And they don't want golfers doing this to massage their handicap down, right? Which, you know, there are people, you might say, why would you do that? Actually, you know, there's many golfers who want to stay low and they dread the day where they say they're off three. You know, they don't want to ever say they're off three. So those bad rounds will just disappear. The handicap committee have a responsibility to keep on those people's cases and to punish them for repeated failures. So repeated failures show a pattern in someone trying to massage a handicap, particularly in this case, massaging it down. I can imagine there'll be less of that than the other direction, but it is an issue. Whereas at least in the old system, you're going to keep getting those 0.1s and you'd eventually creep up. So that for me is the big difference, but you're right, it affects CSS. Oh, absolutely. Right. So all in all, Nigel, now that we've gone through this session, I get the feeling you're less happy than you were before we started the session.
Well, I'm less... I probably know more about the system now, but yeah. I don't see the advantages really.
Okay, don't see enough advantages.
Advantages. Yeah, I don't see enough advantages for golfers in Ireland, apart from being able to take their handicap abroad, essentially.
And let's be honest, like I've never played golf outside of the Republic of Ireland, so for me. And I'd say quite a lot of golfers, I'd say a very high proportion of them, having a mobile handicap is not really a factor.
And potentially this was agreed upon pre-COVID, where we had a lot of golf tourism was huge in Ireland.
Yeah.
It's not anymore. It's been decimated by COVID.
Yeah. If ever we didn't need it.
Yeah, the big clubs are going to suffer. Now, I imagine there are a lot of golfers that came over to Ireland looking to play competitions from America or from Europe. And they're because they have different handicap systems, they couldn't play.
Yeah.
So this would give them the opportunity to play it. But as I said, the COVID has really, you know, knocked the industry and the usefulness or the actual potential advantage of this system has been significantly reduced.
Agreed, yeah.
So I don't really... I see the system as being a bit more flexible, a bit more attuned to your current playing, but in being more attuned to how you're currently playing means that it can be manipulated a lot more.
Correct, yeah.
So...
And it can be more volatile for the golfer.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't... I don't know. We'll see how it works. We'll probably have another discussion about this in a year's time.
I think we will. Well, Nigel, I reckon this time next year we'll be playing in the Andy Doherty final, right? You'll be off 11. I'll be off... So you've got a maximum 5 back. I'll be off probably 10. So I think I'll be giving you one shot. So it'll make no difference. It'll make no difference. Under the new...
It makes a difference, all right.
So...
Pip you on 18.
I tell you what. So, yeah. So thanks, Nigel. I hope for the viewers there, you got something from that. I hope I didn't bore you to death. I hope I didn't scare the life out of you with all these calculations. But I hope you've taken away from this that it's not just going to be as simple as rocking up to your golf club, writing down a number on a card, and off you go. There is a little bit of work you need to do before you go out in the course to determine your course handicap and your playing handicap on the day. I think golf clubs are going to have to reprint scorecards to have a box for course handicap and a box for playing handicap so golfers can see what they're going to receive on a given day. I know the GUI are providing to all the golf clubs around the country various different posters that can be posted at their golf club so golfers can very easily determine what their handicap on the given day is for that course and for whatever competition they're playing in. But it's going to take a little bit of time to get used to it. And fortunately, we've the winter to do that. Well, if we come back and open up our golf courses, so that we'll be well used to it by the time we get back to counting or these very important competitions we're likely to see in February and March and April of next year. Okay, so like Christmas Eve, yeah. I wish you all the best over the weekend. And I hope you all receive the handicap you want on Monday morning. I hope you're all going to be happy with that. Give me a prediction. What's your handicap going to be on Monday morning? Let's see how close you are. We'll test you out next week. What's your prediction? So you're currently 6.3.
I think it'll go down. I think I'll still probably be 6. It'll probably be around 5.6, I'd say.
So you think 5.6. You think you're going to receive a 0.7 reduction on the current system? Okay. Yeah. My own one is, let's have a look. I'm currently 5.9. I'm going to suggest I'm going to go up.
Have you calculated yours?
No, I haven't. I swear, I haven't looked at my top 20 at all. I haven't looked at the last 20. This is pure from gut feeling. I think I'm going to go to 6.3. So I think I'm going to move up to your handicap. You think you're coming down to 5.6. I think I'm going to increase to 6.3. So let's see who's right next week on that one. And I'll keep a record of it here. Yeah. Right. Thanks, Nigel. Take care. Have a good weekend.
All right.
See you now.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
So just to confirm, this podcast is not sponsored in any way. All views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever with which I have been, am now, or will be affiliated. Please do subscribe to the podcast, Brad Golf TV. You'll find me on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, etc., etc. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It's Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. On Facebook, you'll find me at bradgolf.ie. And you can also drop me an email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in the weeks and months ahead. You've been listening to Brad Golf Podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please do come back soon and join me for another round.